and chisel clove and graver wrote, and forged was blade and bound was hilt, and silver mine the mason built, and battle pearl and
oak. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the final episode of Riddles in the Dark before the film comes out. This is pretty exciting. We are really, really, and also this is like an unprecedented second episode in a second week. No, we've done that before, but still pretty exciting. Usually we go the other direction and have like a month break. So, everybody is here and, we have a hard stop in like, hour and 45 minutes. So without further ado, yeah. let's get
probably
it going.
About an hour and half, actually.
Yes, yes. So yeah. Let's get going. I'm your co-host, Dave Kale. With us is also my co-host from Riddles in the Dark Digest, Trish Lambert, and of course the illustrious Tolkien professor, Professor Corey Olson. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning. I want to do for Corey like they did for Stephen Colbert. Corey! Corey! Corey!
Thanks, Trish. I appreciate that. That's very thoughtful. All right. So today we're gonna take a fun stroll down memory lane here as we review all of the riddles that we've done this year. Of course, you know, part of the whole premise of this game from the beginning, you know, we called it Riddles in the Dark because there was so much that we didn't know, and the whole fun was looking at the evidence that we have, primarily from the text, but also secondarily from the images and the stories and the clips and things and trailers released by the film people to sort of speculate and guess what was going to be going on even when we knew very little. And of course now, even before we have seen the film, we know so much more than we did back in, what was it, January, February when we started this?
I think that's right.
That I'm sure that some of our guesses and even some of our riddles themselves might seem a little bit funny in retrospect. But so of course that means those of you who waited until the very last second to register your votes get a cruelly unfair advantage. I can't help but think.
And we might penalize you for that.
Yes. Or at least assuage our own pride.
Yes.
So, yes.
Well, I personally want to give bonus points to anyone who's been listening from the very beginning.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Then again,
it does seem like there should be some kind of handicap, you know?
Yes. Then again, anyone who started listening anytime, I thank you very much.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. It's not like we're prejudiced against more recent listeners, but hey, it's the nature of the game.
So, do you want to just sort of go right back to the beginning and start?
Sure. Yeah. Well, we started with dwarves. Episode 1 and 2, we talked about Thran and Thror, respectively.
In fact, I remember that after the first, like after Riddle, the fourth episode or so, there was somebody who came on was on your Facebook page complaining and saying, "Are you guys ever going to talk about, you know, The Hobbit?"
Right. Exactly. Because all we did was talk about dwarves. So our first questions were basically related to that subject, which has been so very exciting to so many of us over the last week, and that is the background stuff on the dwarves and how they're going to be handling Thorin's family history and the background story to The Hobbit. That is, you know, stuff that takes place chronologically prior to the Unexpected Party. And our two questions. And I'll talk about them right now in chronological order rather than talking about them in the order in which we actually did them in the show. Was first, what are they going to do with Thror? Because, of course, as we know in the books, Thror is killed by Azog the Goblin, and that's what precipitates the war between the dwarves and the goblins, which culminates in the Battle of Azan-Ulbazar. So that was where we really raised the Azan-Ulbazar question, and were initially debating that. But then the question with Thran was, how are they going to handle Thran's disappearance? He's captured by the Necromancer, and of course, again in the books, we know that Thran survives the Battle of Azanulbazar, of course. But later on, he decides, at least the theory is, it's not known quite for sure, that he's going to try to sneak back to Erebor and use the map and try to get in. But he's captured. He's captured in Mirkwood by Sauron, by the Necromancer, and held in prison until Gandalf finds him. His Ring of Power, the Dwarven Ring, is taken from him, and he is, but he manages to keep the map and the key. Gandalf finds him, gets the map and the key, and then he dies. So our question was, are they gonna do that? How are they gonna do that? How much of that are we gonna see? Of Thran's story, and in particular Thran's capture by the Necromancer. That was our very first riddle. Are we going to see that in full flashback mode? Are we going to get that from, you know, as like exposition from Gandalf? Are we going to get that as exposition from Thorin? Is there going to be no reference to it whatsoever? What did we say on that, Dave?
About what do you mean?
What were our votes?
Oh, riddle number one. You voted A, which is full flashback to journey.
Yeah.
I voted C, just exposition from Thorin to others.
Right. I remember those days of heady optimism.
Yep. Yep.
I was so optimistic for my first several, votes.
Yeah, and it just, your answers slowly started migrating from around A and B to, you know, nothing. They'll remove it. They'll change it.
Yes. That became jaded over time. Yeah. Well, no, see, it's not that A's and B's are intrinsically more optimistic. And even to use the word optimistic implies a set of assumptions which I think are kind of questionable. But certainly optimistic in the sense of wanting everything that is possible to be included to be included.
That's right. Just the way that you'd want it to be.
Exactly.
In terms of optimism about the game and whatnot, and by the way, Trish is, if you recall, this was one of those questions where the very first question is where Father Roderick started his precedent of adding answers to our options.
Yes.
And Trish is one of the folks that that chose the Father Roderick answer on this question.
What was Father Roderick's answer again?
His was exposition from Thrain to Gandalf. I think basically idea would be that Gandalf would encounter Thrain at Dol Guldur, and then that's where the audience would learn about Thrain's story through Thrain recounting it to Gandalf. I gotta tell you, I think that's pretty unlikely since Thrain's supposed to be crazy here, and the shots presumably of him were him as like a crazy old man attacking Gandalf. Now,
and I have to say that I kind of think that the developments that have come out, I mean, the fact that it seems like, you know, cause at that point we were assuming that if we got Gandalf and Dol Guldur, we would be getting the Gandalf and Dol Guldur way prior to the unexpected party. I mean, the kind of temporal shift that they seem to have done in the film would seem now heavily to argue against, I think, that because the whole point of Gandalf meeting Thran in the Dungeons of the Necromancer is to get the map and key. And the map and key are going to be given to Thorin at the unexpected party. You know, of that I feel very confident from all the film stuff that's been released. So clearly, Thran's not going to be involved in the map and key in that way. And if Gandalf doesn't go to Dol Guldur until film 2, what's he going to meet Thran there for? I'm not sure he's gonna.
But what do you think about the scenes of Gandalf fighting the crazy old hobo man at Dol Guldur?
You know, some crazy old hobo guy doesn't mean it has to be Thran. I mean, I was never 100% convinced. I was never even 50% convinced that was Thran when that initial speculation came out following the first trailer in December. Though I think it was that speculation which prompted us to do our very first riddle on Thran, because that speculation was still rife at the time. And I never... I mean, I considered it and still do consider it a possibility, but I don't honestly see what function Thrain has in the story now. I mean, it's easy for me to say, like, well, since his only function in the book is to give the map and key, and he's not going to, obviously not going to be doing that, then therefore he has no more function and can't be in it. I mean, perhaps there is some function that they're going to give to him anyway. But that would seem to me to make him, I mean, basically, it seems to me their only choice, if they're going to include him now, is to make him a fairly significant character.
Yeah.
And he has to have some other purpose. What purpose are they going to give him?
Yep. And
well, and I got to say, you know, one of the things, too, is I don't know that it's Gandalf is not supposed to know that it's Sauron at Dol Guldur. I mean, that's right. Become really plain in the movie, you know, like before they get to Rivendell, he has no idea. And it's actually based on this 13-minute video that just came out a little while. There was a little bit more development on Radagast, and he's apparently the guy who figures out what's going on. I don't know that he figures out it's Sauron, but he's the one that figures out something's bad is going on. And it shows him kind of, he's fighting something strange, like a blue Nazgul or something.
Yeah,
so,
that was in one of the trailers. It looked like a water spirit. It looked like something. I saw that because when I was watching football this past weekend, they had several Hobbit trailers, and I did see one which had several very suggestively Azanul Bizarre-like scenes. So needless to say, since I had, as it happened, DVR'd this game anyway, I went back and watched it frame by frame like four times, much to the annoyance of my son who was watching football with me at the time. And I noticed that because that happened very soon after the Azanul Bizarre bit. And that was the one part of the trailer that I couldn't make anything out of.
And this 13-minute video has him running through the forest, discovering that the trees are diseased, and, you know, it's like this big thing. So my question then is, when the heck does Gandalf get the map and key then, if it's not him that goes to Dol Guldur? So that's, we're going to see, I guess.
Well, yeah, and that's something that is not, that's not really clear.
That's a question I've had all along about sort of the whole Dol Guldur chronology. How many times does Gandalf visit and when? I mean, I think it seems the way that they've developed the mystery angle on the necromancer, it seems as though likely he's going to make some kind of visit during the actual chronology of the Erebor quest. But I've been wondering all along, like, has he made a prior visit, and will that be shown in some kind of flashback? Because one of the concerns I have now about actually looking at a lot of these questions from the first thing, you know, one of the options we included here is none of the above, it will be left out, yada, yada, yada. If we don't see anything on screen in the first film, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not going to happen. It might happen in later films. When we wrote these questions, there was going to be two films, and it almost certainly was going to happen in the first film if it would happen at all. Now, who knows?
It is true. I mean, you know, the parameters from the beginning have been, you know, the implied parameters are on screen in the cinematic version of the first film.
Yep.
But you're right. One of the complicating things is that what the first film is has changed since we first began.
Yeah.
And in particular, I mean, a great deal of our initial evidence was premised upon that first trailer, which some of which is not relevant anymore.
Right.
So yes, I do think, I don't know if this is an elaborate preparation for me for self-defense for getting things wrong, but which I don't want to rule out. But I do think that actually some things like that are sort of a little bit misleading. But I say we just stick with it.
Well, so two things. One, Billy in the QA proposed that maybe the water spirit thing they're fighting is Goldberry.
Goldberry gone rogue. Yeah.
Gone rogue.
But you know, like, Billy, I'm not gonna pretend I didn't think of that. I mean, I'm sitting there looking at this. It looked like a malevolent water spirit, and I'm like, I only know one water spirit.
Is this before she was kidnapped by Tom Bombadil.
Right, exactly. Before, like, the shotgun marriage. I don't know. I mean, it's... Yeah, no, I don't really think it's Goldberry, but I couldn't. That was the only one scene, and it was so brief that even in frame by frame, I didn't get very much. It was the only thing that I had no clue about. I mean, yeah. And I've been thinking about it ever since, and I can't even guess what part of the story it's in.
Yep.
In order to have some way to contextualize that, so. So yeah, maybe some kind of manifestation which is freaking out Radagast is that's definitely a theory. I don't know, but it's certainly I don't see how it fits into Bilbo and the Dwarves' journey.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Radagast takes a whack at this thing too, so yeah. That's kind of interesting.
Wait, do you know which video this is in, which TV spot or whatever?
No, I didn't. I mean, I only just saw it on
the most recent one.
Yeah,
a link did get posted up on one of either the Tolkien Professor site or the Riddles in the Dark site.
So
is it
10 then?
Probably.
I think it's later than 10.
I thought 10 was the most recent one. Anyway, let's not get too sidetracked by the water spirit. I was just asking because Brianna did. So my proposal for some of these early questions is if it comes down on sort of the minimalist answer, if we don't see anything, like if we don't see any Thrine's backstory for Riddle 1, my proposal would be the ruling is whoever said nothing gets it right. But if there is any feeling at all that the question might still be relevant for future films, then we rule in the person's favor and award them points for this round, but then we leave the question open for the next round.
Right, and we can carry it forward.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I think we'll want to do in our debriefing phase following the first film, is to decide which of our questions we want to leave open or reinstate in essence for film two. I agree. But still, I think the question, no matter what happens in Dol Guldur, I think the question, in film two, I think the question about Thran and his background, I still can't imagine it's going to come up, or it's not going to come up, and I still think the fact that it now seems like we are going to get the Battle of Azan-ul-Bazar is now leading me to think even more that like we seem to be getting backstory, being shown backstory, and if we are, I could imagine being shown a sequence of Thrain's disappearance.
Yes, I feel given the reveal of the highly likely Battle of Azan-ul-Bazar sequence, I feel extremely justified for our early focus on dwarvish stuff.
Absolutely, I totally agree.
It is obvious that these films are going to be heavily driven by dwarf history and dwarf drama.
Yep, I agree. And I am more hopeful than ever that I will get to see the dismembered and branded head of Thror.
Well, I got to tell you something. I have a suspicion that Thror is going to be fighting in the Battle of Azan-ul-Bazar.
He still just better get his head cut off. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I think he is still going to get his head cut off. But I think it's in.
But if they do that, then why the heck are they fighting? Just because?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
I know we've seen Thror as a character. I mean, in one of the books, they actually have a whole photo of the guy and all decked out and stuff. Now, that could also, I suppose, be in the Erebor backstory. So we still could go with
exactly. But anyway, okay. So we'll see. So we're not making great progress here. Those are our first two riddles.
So I don't think there's any clarifications that need to be made to the first question. I think the most relevant thing is just to point out that to remind people the parameters, choose your answer based on what you think will happen in the film that will be released next week, on screen, cinematic release, yada, yada, yada. And if during the debrief phrase, we may go through and say, okay, let's leave this question open for the second film. We will still award points for correct predictions about the first film, but we may reactivate some of these questions for the future films. So,
by the way, in case we're sounding very bossy on this podcast. I do want to let the listeners know that we do have an independent committee of judges who will be meeting at Mythmoot next week to determine, you know, for once and all the correct answers here. So don't, if anybody's thinking, you know, Dave and Trish and Corey are kind of like twisting this to their own, you know, benefit.
You're correct. Well, we are attempting.
Well, I am. Yes. No. Exactly. Basically, a way that one could subtitle this event would this podcast would be special pleading in anticipation of the decisions made by the independent panel of judges next week, whom we are hoping to bias as heavily as possible over the course of today's episode.
Yes. Do you?
But hey.
Independent panel, do you want to risk the wrath of the Tolkien professor? Come on now.
Oh, I won't be wrathful. I won't be wrathful. No. But anyway, yeah, no. So they are going to be none of the three of us actually have an official vote in determining the right or wrong answers.
We do have one member of the committee with us today. So uh-huh. I will not name the person, but one of them is here. Anyway.
So question two was Thror's death, and we've already hinted at it, was how Thror's death will be on screen. And and this is a very, very interesting question, given the evidence that there's going to be Battle of Azanulbazar, and it plays a huge factor in the enmity and ongoing wars between the dwarves and the goblins. So,
yes.
And it looks like that is going to be a something in the films. The films aren't just going to be about recapturing the Erebor from Smaug. In the first film, it looks like the main villains, the main antagonists, are all orcs. At least the ones that we have direct confrontations with, or goblins, the Great Goblin and the goblins of Misty Mountains, and then they're being chased presumably by Azog. So this is a huge thing. This history and how they handle that on screen and whether they might change it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And it's okay. Well, the terms of our riddle. How will Thror's death be portrayed? The full gruesome scene will unfold on screen, including Gnar picking up Thror's severed head. The story will be told by a character, probably Thorin. It will be mentioned in brief, probably in reference to the wars between goblins and the dwarves. It will be left out, and the origins of the dwarf-goblin conflict will be changed. that's going to be interesting. This is going to be interesting to adjudicate. What did I guess on this? I guessed A, right? I was
yep.
in my optimistic. Okay. All right. I'm just making sure I know so that in the analysis I'm about to do, I can attempt to bias the judges appropriately. Okay. So,
For the record, if he dies on screen in the Battle of Azanulbazar, does not count as A.
Oh, now, come on. See, that's just what I was going to argue. I'm going to argue that a decapitation is a decapitation. And if we get him, if he gets decapitated and his head held up in triumph by an orc in the Battle of Azanulbazar, man, I would argue that that still counts, man. Because, come on.
I think I agree with that. I don't know how to handle it if what if he gets speared?
If he gets speared, then it's clearly not A.
Here's what I would say, actually. Even if he gets speared, if at some point during the Battle of Azanulbazar on screen it transpires that his head is removed from his body,
yes.
I think that counts. I think that's A.
Yeah. Now, of course, here's one of the problems is that the premise, you know, we said that this question was about Thror's death, but really our focus is on the origin of the dwarf-goblin conflict.
Yes.
And we were making an assumption, which in retrospect is perhaps not well-founded, though it might still be, which is that Thror's death was, you know, given that Thror's death is the premise for the goblin-dwarf war. That's the cause of the whole thing. How will they treat that? Will we see it? Will we hear about it by Thorin? Will it be referred to? Or will that not happen, and will it be altered completely? So if, you know, if say Thror is alive and does get decapitated in the Battle of Azanulbazar, and no real explanation is given for the dwarf goblin war, or some other explanation is given for why they're fighting in the first place, you know, one could make an argument for D to say that the origins of the dwarf goblin war have been changed.
Yes.
You know, if that happens, and so that both A and D could be in some sense true or almost true if that happens. So that's tricky. For me, I think that that's part of the, as much as I would like to bias this in my favor as strongly as possible, I think, sort of shamelessly, I do think that the intention of our question was involved with that, and that what mm-hmm. we meant by mm-hmm. the scene will unfold meant the murder, not the death in battle, but the murder of Thror.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of think if he's there for some other reason. Now, again, I still don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I still think that they are going to use the death of Thror, because they're going to want. I mean, from everything that I've heard about Thorin and Thorin's depiction in the film, I think this whole like dark family vengeance thing is going to be a big part of informing, right. Like, you know, my kingdom's been taken away, my grandfather was murdered, my father was probably murdered, and I don't even know what happened to him, and, or maybe I do know that he was carted off to the necromancer's dungeon and I can't do a thing about it, and like, you know, and I'm sitting here like feeling helpless and grumpy and I'm not going to take it anymore. Like, that seems to be part of the whole attitude of Thorin's character,
right.
In the film, or at least seems to fit with everything we've seen. So I have a hard time imagining that they're gonna do away with the whole "you killed my grandfather" plot thread.
Right.
But
it,
you know,
could be
with the goblins.
I can imagine a world in which we ultimately decide to award points to people who do. Who answered A or D, because what you can imagine is, obviously, if he's at the Battle of Azanulbazar, then there's some kind of inciting event that started that, that was not his death, since he's still alive. And yet, if as the film goes on, there becomes increasing evidence that he, nevertheless, his death during the Battle of Azanulbazar is... you know, is important to Thorin, or that they're seeking revenge for that now. You know, if that comes up during the confrontation with the Great Goblin, then in some sense A and D are not necessarily mutually exclusive. The it happens on screen. He gets his head cut off, all that kind of stuff. Clearly, that's A, and yet somehow, you know, it's also might be D. So. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. Especially given the change in the changes in the parameters and how little we know, that seems to me fair.
Yep.
That we could conceivably have more than one correct answer.
Yeah, but I do think you're right. I think that what this comes down to is not just what happens on screen, but also what, you know, where does it show up in the story, the larger story.
Yep.
That, you know, and what role does it play? Is it an inciting event for some particular enmity, even if not for the original wars? So I think that's right. What would be interesting is what if he's on screen in the war, but we don't actually see his death on screen, and then later in the movie his death is referenced.
Now, the greater always trumps the lesser. I mean, if one choice is it's only referenced, and the other choice is we see it and it's referenced, the referenced is wrong and the see it is correct.
No, I mean, but what if the actor who's playing Thror appears on screen during the Battle of Azanulbazar, but we don't actually see what happens to him. We just see him standing beside Thorin in a brief glimpse of the battle, getting ready to fight or fighting or whatever. And then later in the film, we're told, oh, yeah, he died during that battle.
I don't know. I think this is what we have.
All right, we'll let the
judges
decide. We'll let the judges decide it. But
hey, I got to just say, you guys, we really suck at being efficient. We have 45 minutes to go through the rest of the riddles.
Yep,
the
let's go. Let's go.
No problem. We're on pace here.
Yeah. So, the next riddle, of course, was our favorite one, which is Will they conflate the Battle of Azinobar with the Battle of Five Armies? I think this is pretty much all but answered almost.
Yeah, I think. At least we now have very good evidence to think so. Yeah,
very strong evidence. Yep. And I'm really sad to say that because
we neither of us predicted it.
Yeah, Trish didn't predict it either. In fact,
we all predicted B. Yeah, we all thought it would be.
In fact, we are witnessing the triumph of Mark Fisher.
Mark Fisher.
You know, but I've always said that you know, like. There were many of these riddles that I would have been happy to be wrong about. So, you know.
Yep,
that's right.
That was one of them. That was one where we were like, we're picking B, but boy, we really hope we're wrong.
That's right. That's right. Not going to complain about that. Some things are more important than winning.
I mean, at the time we were talking two movies, and we just couldn't see how they'd be able to really do any justice to Azinobazar. So, you know, that was kind of, I think, the basis of our answer. But, yeah, I mean. I don't remember when Mark answered. I think the points go to Mark because he actually did answer this back when it was still two movies. So kudos
That's
to
true.
Mark.
Yeah.
That's true.
And you know, and Sean Gunner, he also picked A for what it's worth. He did answer it later, but he certainly answered it before the
oh, yes. well,
right.
TV spots were released. So actually two people will get this right, it seems like.
Yep.
Okay, now cool. Riddle 4 is an interesting one. I think this one we have to table, don't we?
Yeah, I think.
How will Thorin end up in the Elven King's dungeon?
Oh yeah, great. Yep, more than likely.
So the question here is do we do have to table it? Do we freeze the answers?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because I think anything that comes out about it now. Or you know, in the next year, between now and the release of the second film, anything that comes out about it will almost certainly confirm or deny it. So, answer's frozen.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Riddle five.
And
here's one
I want to say.
Think...
Riddle five. Dave and I got this one right. Dave, I think you and I got this one right.
It hasn't been confirmed yet, has it?
No, it looks fairly suggestive, though.
Yeah, it's pretty. I've seen it. I mean, he definitely uses his staff to break the stone, which lets the sun through.
With the sun, yeah, that's been a very consistent feature of the.
And I've even seen the before and after
trailers.
You know, when they were doing behind the scenes thing where they had the full stone and then they had the broken stone and stuff. So, but he uses magic. I mean, it's his staff that does it. It's the old "you cannot pass" thing.
Is it magic or is it just him sort of doing the, you know, kind of pointing out, indicating with his staff that, oh, look, there's the sun.
No, he breaks the stone with his staff.
He does seem to break the stone, yeah.
Ooh.
That's what it looks
interesting,
like.
Interesting, interesting, interesting. All right, well, that's cool. Let's just briefly review what the options were here. So the question, of course, is how will the defeat of the trolls be brought about on screen? And the options were A, the Mark Fisher answer. It will happen by the sun coming up and Gandalf merely delaying the trolls through cleverness and throwing his voice. B was it will happen via epic Lord of the Rings style action sequence. The dwarves with Gandalf's help will fight off the trolls long enough for the sun to rise. C was Gandalf will accomplish it via magic, either directly or indirectly. This is sort of the Lord of the Rings films on-screen magic type answer that he'll be, you know, shooting bolts of sunlight or whatever, or maybe even using magic to
or cause the sun to come up early
or
something.
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And then D is just the trolls will be stupid and will just screw around until they get caught by the sun. So. And what we had in mind in particular for D was that essentially maybe the dwarves will escape and nothing the dwarves or Gandalf do will directly contribute to the trolls being caught out in the sun. But after the dwarves escape, let's say, then the trolls will be just sitting around their fire depressed and we'll just be like, oh, crap, there's the sun and we'll get caught. So. But I guess it is looking like it might be C. Although we've seen glimpses of things that look like action sequences, but that could be maybe before they all get captured.
Before they all get bagged.
Yep.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to put up a bit more of a struggle, which is what we suspected all along.
Yeah. But hey, here's a riddle that will for sure be answered in the first movie. The shouldn't be a lot of controversy.
Yeah, that's good anyway. But yes, I agree. C is certainly looking like the early favorite there.
Yep. Yep. We at least have one good question.
Okay, and then we get into, in number six, we get into the first really tricky one, which is the ending of the first film question.
Yes, yes. The question was, what will be the tone of the final moment of The Hobbit: An Unexpected Journey?
Right.
Yeah, this one is tricky because, we intentionally tried to avoid saying where will it end or what will the ending be, because we knew there was so much uncertainty. But I think this one sort of is highly dependent on where the first film ends. And so it's tough. What we see, you know, when I made this prediction, I made it assuming that we would be ending with the dwarves on their way to Lake Town, and that we'd be,
yes.
You know, the options...
I still think it holds up though, based on what we've seen. I think the movie's ending now with the two of them standing on the Carrick and looking out at the Lonely Mountain.
I think it does. I mean, the question's still relevant, obviously. It's just more, there's probably certain people that would love to change their assumption,
right,
about the ending and
oh, the answer. Right.
the options were, A, suspense. It'll be a cliffhanger, like our example was, they're captured by elves. B was hopeful that maybe they just escaped the Elven King's dungeons and they're on their way to the next step, or perhaps another example of suspense would be they're sitting in trees about to burn to death. B is the hopeful. Another example of that is they're on the backs of eagles or in the clutches of eagles flying away. I guess that could also be suspenseful too, if they think they're going to be eaten by the eagles.
Or they've just been dropped off by the eagles.
Yes. C is foreboding. It's sort of an ominous, ending. We're looking forward to sort of a dangerous ending. And that could be maybe they escape from the burning trees, the eagles drop them off, and then our last shot is of orcs mustering around Dol Guldur, or that sort of favorite little sequence that we love talking about, of, you know, a shot of the Lonely Mountain and it zooms into the secret door and then we go down the passage and then there's a burst of flame or something like that. That would be foreboding.
Or an eye opens.
D would be grief. Some kind of loss. I don't think anybody thought that would be the answer. So, and we all picked C. We all think it's going to be ominous.
Oh, yeah, I did.
In fact, everyone...
I was of the...
Everyone except Mark Fisher picked C. Mark picked A.
Nobody picked B, which is what it's actually looking like it's most likely to be.
Well, that's what I wonder. I mean, I was going to say the same thing.
I still think it's going to be foreboding.
Yeah, I think it could. And remember, the terms of this are the last thing that we see.
The final moment.
Right, that's right.
So if we have this wonderful, uplifting rescue by eagles from flaming trees at the end of the film, but then, you know, the final shot is like we pan over towards something gloomy looking, or Mirkwood, or Dol Guldur, for all I know, or maybe, you know, the Lonely Mountain in the distance, and we get a, you know, glimpse of...
Plus, Howard Shore's music, well, the music will probably also give us a cue,
very
right?
Very much so, exactly.
Foreboding.
So. Yep. Yep, exactly.
Cool.
So, fortunately, I do think by chance that one holds up. I mean, it is a little bit hard. I would have been more tempted to say B.
If chance you call
had
it.
Had I known. Yeah, but I guess we can work on that. Okay, so our next one is the White Council stuff in connection with the split,
which seems highly likely to get.
And this is another movie two one.
Yeah,
I think we're going to have to end up deferring this one. So our question was, how will the film adaptation handle the conflict between the White Council and the Necromancer? That is, like, the actual Battle of Dol Guldur. Is it going to be an immaterial spiritual conflict from a distance, an epic battle sequence, direct physical/magical conflict between principles only? a la Gandalf versus Saruman in the Fellowship of the Ring, or no direct conflict at all. No, I think we're going to have to table that one.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely true. There's no hope of that being on screen in the first film. One comment about the previous riddle, the tone of the ending. This does not include post-credit sequences.
Oh, yes.
They
agree.
Go the Marvel film universe route. I don't think they will, but yeah, I don't think that'll be it.
Right. Yes, but yes, I agree. It's the last pre-credits shot. Yep.
Right. Before Neil Finn starts to sing.
That's right. So riddle 8, an interesting one, was what will be the main role of the Nazgul in the Hobbit films? And we kind of fudged a little bit on sort of films.
This was our CinemaCon, our post-CinemaCon emergency episode.
Yes.
When the whole business about the tombs of the Nazgul broke.
And interestingly, there's been neither hide nor hair of Nazgul since then.
I was just going to say the same thing. That has been invisible. It has vanished like it never existed since then.
But the Morgul knife is going to show up at the White Council meeting. Based on some of the videos I've seen.
I mean, it looks like it, but it doesn't. It could well be. Maybe it'll be. There's always the possibility that they are testing some of this content and floating out, and then especially when they made the decision about splitting into three films, maybe they axed all this stuff, and we won't see it until
it's conceivable.
DVD release.
I don't think so. There's a certain amount of precedent for some things in particular, the Arwen at Helm's Deep thing in the Lord of the Rings films,
they
which
have
they had
it.
Already filmed, and then edited out. But
this whole Morgul knife scene is recent. I mean, it was like it just did something that got released last week. So my thought is
no. But it's the actual tombs of the Nazgul that sequence which has vanished.
In the scene that was recently released, do they mention it? Do they refer to it as Morgul knife, or is there just a shot of the White Council and a knife sitting on the table?
No, it's wrapped up in the skin, and Jackson is actually giving directions about how they approach it and all that kind of stuff. But I will say I don't remember it being actually referred to in that clip as a Morgul knife.
Interesting.
Though, I mean, I could imagine them using that anyway. That is to say whether or not they're actually going to – that by itself doesn't seem to me to either confirm or deny the tombs of, whether they're going to keep the tombs of the Nazgul.
Right.
It may well be that they are, and the reason that it's vanished so completely I could see its vanishment being explained by the combination of A, Peter Jackson not wanting to talk about it anymore because it's in film 2, and so on for policy reasons, him completely clamming up about it and never alluding to it. That combined with the fact that most Tolkien fans don't want to think about that, and so therefore they're happy to forget, to oblige him by forgetting about it. I don't know. but I do think that one way or another, I don't think this is going to be in the first film.
Yeah, do you think it's a movie 2 question? I mean, we should keep it live at this point, right?
But it certainly seems to me that if that is going to be in there, based on what we now know, that is about the fact. Back when we were talking about this, my assumption had been that we were going to get some like solo adventures of Gandalf at the beginning of the film, because again, I was sort of presuming on the
James
book
Bond
timeline.
Sequence.
Yeah, I still have fantasies about that. But anyway, we were still basing it on the premise that he was going to be doing his snooping around Dol Guldur stuff and possibly Tombs of the Ringwraiths or whatever prior to the unexpected party. But that's now, all of that stuff has been moved until later. So chronologically, the only place I could see it fitting would be when they split before Mirkwood, and again, that's one of the places where Gandalf goes.
Well, actually, in one of the, I've been seeing so many things, I can't remember which interview it's in, and I can't remember who said it. I think it might have been a McKellen, says something about how in this story, in this movie, you actually get to see where Gandalf goes. The Gandalf keeps leaving the company, and you actually get to see where Gandalf goes.
Right. Right, right. Yeah, no,
so,
that's exactly what I would
be.
Expect. As part of the fundamental premise of the films, actually. Yeah, no, exactly. That's just what I would expect.
Right.
So, I think that's, if it's going to fit, I think it's likely to fit there. In fact, what I can easily see is him using the whole Tombs of the Nazgul thing, if that's indeed going to happen, as a replacement. That basically, I could easily see Gandalf not entering Dol Guldur on his own, because in this context, where if we're going to get in the same film, Gandalf's investigations and confirmation that it's Sauron, plus the actual attack on Dol Guldur by the White Council, well, then Gandalf going to Dol Guldur twice would be lame. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think, potentially. So having him do, if he can confirm outside of Dol Guldur, if he can find some way to confirm that it's actually Sauron, then, you know, by seeing that the Ringwraiths have come to join him, you know, that could be the evidence that he then brings back to Galadriel and says, I'm pretty sure this necromancer guy is Sauron. Let's attack. And then they go for Dol Guldur from there. I still am kind of ambivalent. Well, no, I'm more than kind of ambivalent. I'm still rather disapproving of the whole Tombs of the Nazgul concept to begin with. But I, if it's going to fit, that's how I would see it.
Yep.
Yeah, and Sharon Hoff actually makes the point. She's right. It is in the art, in that book about the the artwork of the movie. The Nazgul tombs are in that book.
Really?
And it's supposed to be pertaining to movie one. Yeah.
The art of the movie. What's it called?
It's not officially out yet. You might have it. It's not due to actually come out until the 11th, but it's like
yes.
The art and something is art and something else, but somebody kind of like they scanned a whole bunch of pages from it and put it up on Facebook.
okay. No, I don't have
so we
that.
Got
I do have a Houghton Mifflin is publishing a bunch of the official, I think they're publishing all of the official movie books, movie companions, and they sent me a bunch.
Okay, well,
of
this
them.
One might come out. It's due for publication on the 11th. You might be getting it soon.
Okay.
I don't know if
they sent me Brian Sibley's official movie guide, Jude Fisher's visual companion. I've got An Unexpected Journey, The Hobbit activity book. I've got the movie storybook, which does contain some things which are clearly relevant to our riddles, and then the World of Hobbits or something. It's another like picture book kind of thing.
So, about this question, I'm looking through this and I'm thinking this looks like this could be difficult to judge. If I don't know which of these, if there's nothing on screen about the Nazgul, I don't know which of these answers is correct.
Right. Well, I think if there's nothing on screen at all, we table it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if we don't see... Because the question here is, what is the focus of the activity of the Nazgul? And so even if there's discussion about them, even if there's talk about the tombs and the Morgul Blade and all that kind of stuff, if we don't actually see any Nazgul running around on screen, or we don't hear any discussion of, oh, the Nazgul were you know, chasing the party, or the Nazgul or... You know, if there's no discussion by the White Council of what they're up to or where they are, it will be very difficult to answer this. So this might get pushed to film two. Or at least, even if we can answer it, even we can say, for the first film, they were dredging the river by the Gladden Fields, we may end up activating it for film two. So that's
right.
Just something. I'm
right.
Basically, as we go, I'm writing judging comments for questions when relevant. So.
Right.
And in our instructions to the judges, I think we're going to include a list of questions that either, you know, this one we don't expect you to, you know, we're going to let them make the final call, but we're going to include instructions about, like, you know, this is a question we expect was not answered, push, you know, so if it isn't, push it to film two, or, you know, go ahead and answer this question for film one, but we may reactivate it for film two. But the answers here were the question we tried to be very crafty with this question, and we asked what will sort of the Ringwraith's main theater of action be? So allowing for the possibility that they might split up and do various things, the question, you know, our focus here is what is their main purpose? So where are the
That's
majority
right.
of them?
Right.
And the answers were they were heading for Mordor. preparing for Sauron's relocation. That's the book answer.
That's the book answer.
In a sense, they were never locked in a tomb, but that's where they were during this time. Was that they'll be focused on Erebor. So the company's being pursued. There's still a possibility maybe it's the Nazgul or they're involved in that somehow. C is they're focused on defending Dol Guldur. Maybe we'll see them hanging out, preparing the defenses or something. And then D is that they'll be seeking the ring. We had a humorous picture of them wearing scuba gear diving in the river near the Gladden Fields.
Yes. Yes, dragging the river, yeah.
With a hookah rig.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep. So anyway, that's Nazgul. Any other comments or should we move on?
I have to let Corey know what the name of that book is. It's called Chronicles, the Art and Design of the Movie, and it's by Harper Design, which sounds like another spinoff publisher maybe of HarperCollins.
Yeah, it does sound like an affiliate. But no, I don't have that one, so that is interesting to hear. Okay, so next one, we should move along. Number 9 was the frame narrative episode.
Yes.
And so this one, despite all changes to the later aspects of the film, is still perfectly relevant, and that is, how will the film start? When it comes up, what is the first thing we will see? Voiceover exposition of background story elements, a la the Galadriel voiceover in The Fellowship of the Ring. And then we have two types of flashback. That is, flashback type 1 to an epic action sequence, flashback type 2 so we get some kind of historical scene, but not an action sequence. Then D was to begin with a frame story. That is, the first thing we get is a scene in the Shire with Bilbo and Frodo.
Yep.
Now, I do want to point out that the deal here is opening moment. The question
that's
is,
right.
What will be the opening moment? So that's what opening I based moment. My answer on. See, I answered A, and you guys both answered D.
Yes. See, now, the epic action sequence, one might argue, say, well, like, doesn't The Fellowship of the Ring, for instance, open with an epic action sequence because it opens with, the Battle of Dagorlad and the ring being taken from Sauron? No, it's a voiceover. That's one scene out of many. It's the longest and most detailed scene that we get. But if something like that happens, if there is that, if the action sequences that we're getting on screen are only supporting the voiceover exposition that we're getting, then the answer is A. Yes, we were predicting no voiceover exposition, that we're not going to get that same motif. Dave, you and I both did not choose A, right?
That is correct.
That's right.
We were skeptical about how that could be used effectively or consistently with the frame story.
Right. Right. Yep. And I'm still hopeful that we'll go with D.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as we said in the last episode, one of the biggest questions I have and still have is, how is the opening half hour of this film going to go? There are so many different things to be done and so many different transitions that I don't see. And I don't think that those problems are solved by a voiceover exposition. I mean, the way they did the voiceover in The Fellowship of the Ring was very effective because it introduced us to the concept of the Elven Wise who are looking over things in Galadriel. It introduced us to the history of the rings and the nature of Sauron and the necessary backstory to understand the significance of the Ring of Power. It set the thematic stage for Aragorn and his final refusal of the ring at the end of that first film.
Mm-hmm.
It brought together things very effectively. When I talk about the complexity of things that need to be brought together at the beginning of this film, it's a different set of things. There's the frame story. Frodo and Bilbo are going to both be there. How is that going to be integrated with? And there's a series of flashbacks. I am not sure that as an Ulbazar and the Lonely Mountain attack, that is the sack of Erebor by Smaug, could be comfortably done in the same exposition in the same way. Those are two different stories and have different significances in the film. The one, the Battle of Azanul-Bazar, is the explanation of the enmity between the goblins and orcs. Mm-hmm. The Sack of Erebor, of course, sets up the whole Quest of Erebor story. But again, I don't see... I mean, you could do, like, and here's a history of the dwarves kind of exposition at the beginning, in which, theoretically, you could do both of those, but I think they lose their force if they're just lumped together as two incidents in a sequence like that.
And they have a spot to do that at the Unexpected Party, too, so there's already a logical place to do that backstory.
Right.
You know, when Thorin's talking. Also, we also know, which I think really, that part of the frame narrative with Bilbo and Frodo is it's the day of Bilbo's 11th birthday party, and Bilbo tells Frodo Gandalf is coming, and so Frodo runs off to meet him, which of course is the beginning of Fellowship of the Ring.
The Fellowship of the Ring.
Yeah,
that's funny. I don't know.
Personally, I hope we're going to start with Bilbo recounting his family tree.
Ah, so we get an introduction to Bungo and Belladonna?
It could happen.
Yeah, and also because we know hobbits have a passion for that stuff, right? I think that'll be really exciting.
History,
the mainstream audience will really appreciate that.
Absolutely. They'll just lap that up. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, the Chronicles book does have a photo of Belladonna in it, and I know there's a picture, I think it's in Sibley's book, of Gandalf at some kind of fair with little children running around him, which certainly doesn't take place at the Unexpected Party. It's got to be a flashback of some kind.
Well, we do know that there was an interview with Ian McKellen a while back where he did say that they have gone back and filmed scenes of Gandalf interacting with Bilbo's parents and Bilbo as like a small child or even an infant. And that the purpose of that was to essentially sort of suggest, it's getting at some of the stuff that we've seen in the Quest for Erebor, where Gandalf comments on how when he knew Bilbo as a child, he was adventurous and outgoing. And then when he encountered him later as an adult, he was disappointed to find that the Baggins side had taken over.
Exactly. So, exactly. No, that's just what I was going to say. I mean, that is straight out of the Quest of Erebor. So
Right.
Yeah.
Which actually is a great segue into riddle number 10.
Yes.
True.
Yes.
True.
Oh, exactly.
Is how will they portray Bilbo's interaction with other hobbits? And this is basically, the focus of this is what is the starting point of Bilbo's character arc in the film? In the book, of course, he is a completely mainstream hobbit. He has that he's got something queer in his makeup and everything, but it's still, he is, to all appearances, a second edition of his Baggins father. And then, then his discovery of adventurousness and, his growing tookishness and the changes that happen in his character move from that foundation. Are they going to do a similar thing in the film, or are they going to do it differently? And by differently, that there's, in one sense, there's no book answer. When we have two different possible book answers, we made the A book answer the one of the published Hobbit, which is in this case, that he is mainstream, that he's, like Foley Baggins, just like in the Hobbit book. But I say there's two book answers because, of course, the Quest of Erebor depicts Bilbo very differently from the book in that way. It's one of the biggest differences about the Quest of Erebor, I think, in the depiction of Bilbo himself, is the fact that he is already getting a reputation for oddity and for adventurousness, and he's already going off to see elves and stuff prior to the adventure. So our options were that he's mainstream, that he's a loner by choice, but not yet outcast from his fellow hobbits. That is, he's somewhat separated, but he's not yet really socially deviant in the sense of being adventurous and going on journeys and stuff like that. But still already somewhat isolated and not quite fitting in with everybody else. Option C is incipiently adventurous, that he's already notably tookish even before he leaves, and has a reputation for oddity prior to his adventure. And then option D is we're just not going to get anything like that, and those scenes will be cut. So
yep.
What did I say?
I know I answered D because I just at the time there were two movies and right. I just thought they wouldn't spend time, but it does look like we're going to get A. From what I've seen, especially in that 13-minute one, they actually show him like sitting down very pompously to eat, and I mean there's this whole thing about him being very Bagginsy, so I think it's going to be A.
Yeah, I think interesting. Corey, you pick C, and Trish and I pick D, and I really regret that now. Jeez.
Yes, and Dave, I do remember your rationale was there's not going to be time.
So I agreed with that.
And that's because there were.
Still, I think if there had been two movies, I don't think there would have been a lot of time. But now that he's going to three, now he can develop it. Dang it!
Yeah, and I do. I don't remember how we know this. I don't know why I think this, but from the listening to the soundtrack, it sounds like we're going to be like there's going to be like a good half hour of content before we even set out from the Shire. So
right,
I think there's plenty
of plausible.
Time. Yeah.
And they show him at a fair, you know, like at a market and stuff. I mean, there's apparently going to be quite a bit of Hobbiton type footage. I mean, so.
From everything we've seen, it really seems to indicate something in the ballpark of A. But also the scenes that Ian McKellen mentioned of him as an infant, sort of showing his Tookish side, makes me wonder if there's going to be sort of if instead of them portraying him as thoroughly Baggins, if they're going to at least hint at that he has the capacity for enjoying an adventure and
it
stuff.
Could.
So
it
yep.
Could.
No, I sure. still. I still think the exact same thing I thought back then. I haven't changed my opinion on this at all.
Really?
Incipiently Tookish. Absolutely.
You're kidding!
No, and I still think that's true. And for the same reason that I think when in doubt they're going to go Quest of Erebor. And secondly, I actually think that some of the evidence that we've seen supports it. So we'll see. But I'm still feeling confident in my C there.
There was a really cute video that came out. I think it was one of the B-rolls. No, I don't remember. Anyway, it's one where it's during the unexpected party when I think it's just before the whole huge crowd of dwarves show up. And the bell rings and Bilbo is like up to his eyeballs in dwarf weapons. You know, he's carrying them in his arms and he's yelling, "There's no one here! There's no one here! No one's home!"
Struck by lightning.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well,
I think,
you're a stubborn one, Corey.
Incipiently Tookish does not mean completely Tookish. Like, he's still... No. That's been the premise from the beginning. I never thought, and I would certainly hope that they would never make him a character who has no movement whatsoever, you know, and make him like a hardened adventurer when they arrive at his door. But that's not what C was. C is that he is already viewed as odd by his neighbors. That they already, you know, thinking of the scene that we get in The Quest of Erebor, where Gandalf stops by Bag End to see Bilbo before he goes to talk to the dwarves more, and he meets Holman, the gardener, who is Gaffer Gamgee's predecessor as Bilbo's gardener, and Bilbo's not home, and he asks Holman where he is, and Holman's like, "Oh, he's gone off again." You know, and he's visiting elves, and Holman doesn't think it's natural. So Bilbo is still Bilbo. I mean, this is Tolkien's concept. He hasn't totally changed it. But yet he already has gained a reputation for oddity. He's not considered just completely normal. In fact, Tolkien has reverses later on, like, you know, the business, what Holman says about him can't be true if it is still true that the number one thing about Bilbo is his absolute predictability, as is depicted in chapter one of The Hobbit. So that's definitely a shift in Tolkien's mind. But again, it's not a complete shift. So no, incipiently adventurous. That was the phrase. And that's what I'm talking about. I still think...
The compromise answer is B, sir.
Yes.
The compromise answer is B.
No.
It's B.
No, 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 no. No, no, no. That's not the case. C is incipiently adventurous. He's not adventurous yet, but he is showing incipient tookishness, that he has those inclinations. B is that he's separate from his society, but not that he is tookish. Not that everybody looks at him as weird and, like, adventurous, but rather that he's just kind of a loner, that he's marked out as different from everybody else, but not because he's running off on adventures or seems likely to run off on adventures. C is the one where, basically, people are not really shocked that, like, you know, that Baggins is off again is basically like the kind of thing, or like, you know, that basically it's something that doesn't surprise them to find that he's now going off on a crazy adventure, that it seems kind of like him, even though he's not comfortable with it and doesn't want to go. In other words, like I said, C is the quest of Erebor answer.
I think this may end up being the most controversial question.
Perhaps so, but I'm glad. Let me just say, I'm glad we had this little talk. However, because that is definitely how I always conceived of the C answer to that question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dave, I will do my best to keep the judging committee sequestered from Corey.
Please do. I mean, it doesn't matter. None of us stands a chance. Father Roderick's going to win, but.
Let me ask a question here. I suggest that we don't worry about the conundrums in this episode.
Oh yeah, we have no chance.
Let's just do the riddles. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And they're pretty.
Yeah.
And they're pretty easy. So.
Those are by design simpler anyway. So.
Yeah. So riddle number
riddle
11. Gollum. And how will his portrayal in the Hobbit compare to his portrayal in the Lord of the Rings, particularly in the Riddles in the Dark, our namesake scene?
Yes.
A is he'll be more sympathetic via maybe flashbacks. B is he'll be pretty much the same. C is he'll be less sympathetic, more wicked and threatening, and that's kind of the original Hobbit. Original Hobbit, but the published Hobbit.
The second
version.
Edition Hobbit, yeah.
The second edition Hobbit version. And then D is none of the above. I think all signs seem to be pointing to B, probably.
Yeah, which is disappointing.
Yeah. Andy Serkis said when he was interviewed by Stephen Colbert that Gollum's actually hot in this movie.
Yeah. Okay. Andy.
You know, he's 60 years younger, and you know, his skin is much better and stuff.
You know, we talked about that when the second trailer came out, and we had those Gollum scenes. We talked
cute.
About the cuteness
That's right.
factor.
Sharon
yeah.
says cute. Yes.
Exactly. No, I think the cuteness
course,
factor is very real.
And Sharon Hoff wants the credit for having said about the Gollum plushie, which you poo-pooed and which they actually do have out now.
True, yes, yes.
The Gollum plush toy.
They're not going to have a Gollum plush toy. And Sharon was right, I was wrong. The Gollum plush toy does exist. You know, I was speaking at Barnes & Noble in New York on the Upper East Side on Tuesday night, and Nicholas was riveted by the enormous display of Hobbit paraphernalia that they had, Lego sets and whatnot. They had Bilbo plushies there. They did not have the Gollum plushies. That was like 3 hours after Sharon had posted her very justifiably gloating picture of the Gollum plushie that she found. Though I have to say, I found the Bilbo plushie sufficiently disturbing. But the
did they have the Gandalf plushie? Because they have a
they
Gandalf
didn't.
Plushie. Too.
They didn't. I already have a Gandalf plushie, like from the Lord of the Rings vintage Gandalf plushie that was a gift from my students, which is, by the way, how I get almost all of my little Tolkien knickknacks. I almost never purchase them for myself, but anyway. So, but yeah, yes, the Gollum plushie, but it's not cute.
So Yana's suggests in the questions that Gollum seems like maybe he's a little more sympathetic with the puppy dog eyes and particularly in the Colbert. No, they did stuff like that in the Lord of the Rings films. We're not talking incrementally slightly more sympathetic. We're talking demonstrably more sympathetic or more wicked.
Right.
If he really pretty much kind of seems like he was in the Lord of the Rings films, it's B. It's basically what I'm saying is there needs to be overwhelming evidence for it to be anything but B, given what we've seen so far, because he's done, he was pretty in the Two Towers when he's interacting with Frodo and Sam, he becomes pretty sympathetic. He's very helpful, very nice.
They
would have to work very hard to make him not like that.
Right. No, I mean, by that, my recollection of our intention there, that's why we added, like, perhaps by showing flashbacks or revealing more of his internal psychology, that is, and this is still to me an interesting question, which has not for me been answered by any of the trailers or anything I've seen, is how heavily are they going to play the pity card at the end of that sequence? I mean, I presume they're building up to Bilbo's choice to spare Gollum at the end. And when Tolkien added that in the second edition, one of the changes which correlates with that is his change to descriptions of Gollum and background material on Gollum all the way through the Gollum story to make him more pitiable, to make it obvious that he's not just a wicked creature like a goblin, but that he is a miserable creature with a tragic past. So Tolkien himself made that choice in setting up Bilbo's act of pity at the end. And are they going to do it? So that's what I sort of mean by A, is that in this film they're going to go out of their way to make sure that we are pitying Gollum, that they're sympathetic, that we're sympathetic with Gollum. As Dave said, in some kind of overt way, not just like, oh, I think he seems kind of nice sometimes, but rather. Like,
it can't be connected to sort of the on screen, like, oh, the way they CGI'd him this time, he looks cuter. No,
right,
it has
right,
to be
right.
Like no. In the story.
No, I mean, and like, so here's an example I would give: if we see at any point Gollum's grandmother on screen, I'm ready to go A. Like that's like A by definition in my book. If we get a flash, because that could
flashback
happen.
Flashback of his grandmother, especially if she's like beating him, or
yeah,
right, kicking him in the face. Exactly,
or
that's right.
Teaching him to suck eggs or something.
Right, exactly.
I think we can stipulate that.
That's an example of the kind of thing. I mean, because that's one of the things that Tolkien added. I mean, Tolkien added that sentence, which is such a poignant sentence, in the description of Gollum that says that, you know, his during the riddle contest, when he was remembering a time before he was so wretched, before he was alone, when he was, you know, back when he had friends, before he was driven out alone down under the roots of the mountain. That is a concept that's added. I could imagine them doing a similar thing and having a little flashback of, you know, a happy Sméagol or a Sméagol being kicked out. If that happens, something like that. That's what I mean by saying that he's made more sympathetic, that we really are prompted in direct ways, not just because maybe we kind of like him or he seems nice, but that the film is clearly prompting us to have sympathy with him.
By the way, there is a setup for Bilbo's choice that I think is pretty overt, is when they're in the troll cave and Gandalf gives him the sting, you know, and Bilbo says, I can't do this. And Gandalf says, you know, what does he say? Courage is not about when you kill, it's when you don't kill or something like that.
Yeah, Bilbo says, I don't know, something about not having the courage to use the sword. And Gandalf says, you know, real courage is knowing when not to kill. Yeah, it's really hitting us over the head with it.
Right.
Just
right.
So you know, audience, this is
what's coming
to Lord of the Rings. We figured you wouldn't figure it out unless we told you.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So Riddle 12.
Yeah. Okay. Riddle 12 is a cool one. This is a really good.
Riddle 12 is the meta riddle.
Yes. Yes. And the question is basically, how are they going to handle the riddles? And the idea here was there was basically a range of answers from they'll do the scene verbatim all the way down to the Rankin Bass version where they'll just kind of be a montage of riddles. And this one's very curious because for a variety of reasons. One, because this was the very first scene they filmed, but also, you know, with the split, there's the possibility of extra time being dedicated to the scene. Some of the reviews I've read have said this scene is actually the lady from the OneRing.net who wrote a review said she actually cried during this scene. I don't know what that's about.
Right.
Yeah. So this is very curious. And we also had to be very careful with
Gollum's
the way we wrote
grandmother
it.
Grandmother kicking him in the face.
That's right.
Yeah, that could happen.
They will not omit a single riddle, Bilbo's recount during the Council of Elrond.
That's right.
B is that they'll omit some riddles, but the ones that they use will be straight from the book. C is reinvented. In other words, they'll use some of the riddles, but they'll alter them, or maybe they'll even add entirely new riddles. We think, when we discussed this, we really thought there was a strong possibility that they would not be able to resist the temptation to kind of try and rewrite the riddles or alter the riddles to better suit them for a modern audience. And then D is kind of completely stripped down, that there really actually won't be very, very much riddling. It'll mostly be a montage, and it'll be sort of the interaction we see on screen will be not them sitting here reciting these old-fashioned riddles, but more just sort of, you know, kind of banter or whatever.
Right. Right.
So,
and
Corey,
I would clarify.
Go ahead.
I picked C. My clarification here is it does not count as, and this is a perfectly unbiased clarification because this is a clarification which is likely less likely to make me correct than otherwise. Because I said C, I said reinvented, that they'll alter some of the riddles. But I do want to specify, paraphrasing doesn't count. I mean, if they just change the wording a little bit, but it's the same riddles, I wouldn't count that as C. When we say they'll alter some of the riddles or add new ones entirely, we mean really altered, you know, not just change the wording. They may well change the wording, but I still wouldn't count that as C. If we get like the same riddles, but again, just like, you know, they've paraphrased them somewhat, I'm still fine with A or B for that. C is there have to be some entirely new riddles, or they have to have done some massive alterations.
Right.
Yep.
And
I still
think that that's what's going to happen. I still stand by my C prediction on that.
I think that's a very reasonable prediction. So, any comments on that? Otherwise, we should probably keep going. We're
like halfway there, and we have 15 minutes left. So,
good news,
which is fine because, you know, the ones which were a year ago are the ones we most needed to review and talk over. The stuff we've done in the last couple months is much fresher.
Well, we can literally leap over Riddle 13.
Yeah, Riddle 13 we'll skip because
No, I don't quite want to skip this because this is something. The specific question about what the filming will be for next year.
I mean, it is kind of reasonable. Like,
but this was
the question was
this was where this was the Comic-Con one, right? And this was like this was our Comic-Con episode. And right after we did this was when he announced the three films, right?
Yeah. So what this question was aimed at was the idea of an extra film, which has since been confirmed.
Yes.
There is still an interesting question about, one, will they do a bridge film down the road? That was a conundrum. And then also, we still know for a fact that they're filming extra stuff next year, and we don't know 100% what it's going to be, although it's been heavily hinted that it's going to be Battle of Five Armies, because they apparently haven't finished that. But there is still sort of an open question of what are they filming next year, and is it going to be film 2 stuff, film 3 stuff, and whatnot. But we should probably we can talk about that, you know, episode.
Yeah. Well, no, that is the aspect of that one riddle that I think is it, because we were discussing the whole idea of a gap film, and that I think,
and all of us, I think all three of us said that we thought that would happen, and I still think that.
And so, I mean, that's something that I don't want. People were very quick to say, well, Riddle 13 has been answered now when, like, in the next week, Jackson announced the trilogy thing. But I always wanted to clarify that's not actually true. It wasn't a question. That's not exactly what we were predicting. What we were predicting a part of what we were discussing then was the question of an entirely new film project that this would then spin into or develop into.
Yeah.
And that, I think, has still not been answered at all.
Well, that's why that's a separate conundrum. That's why we retcon the question, because I think it is fair to say that the filming for next year is aimed at a third film or for the second film, that the technical answer for Riddle 13 is a third film, but that the conundrum remains unanswered and will not be answered until, you know, will be answered only with time. So,
right.
All right, so next riddle. Under what circumstances will Bilbo be reunited with Gandalf and the dwarves? This is interesting from everything we've seen. This is post this is Misty Mountains. This is post capture by the goblins, post falling into the dank hole of where Gollum is. And our answers were we were really splitting hairs here. Bilbo was escaping the mountains alone. Find them by chance, sneak invisibly among them, showing off his competence as a burglar, the Mark Fisher book answer. B was Bilbo will meet up with them within the mountain somehow, and they will escape together. C was Bilbo escapes alone and then meets them outside the mountains, kind of like A, but that it's turned into an continuous action sequence. He will not happen upon them while they are picnicking on the mountainside. D is Bilbo escapes alone and before the dwarves do, and then returns to the mountains to help them escape, which Corey liked, because that would give Bilbo a chance to display his heroism.
And it's also cool because it's like I'm always amused by the times whenever a plot concept is mentioned in the book, or somebody thinks about doing something in the books and then they don't, and then it really happens in the films. That always really amuses me. And that's of course what happens. Bilbo looks back at the mountains and is like, well, I guess I'm gonna have to go back in and find the dwarves, and that's when he stumbles across their camp. So if they actually made that true, I think that would be funny.
You're right, I like that idea, and they've done that a lot. Sometimes even inappropriately so.
Yes.
They'll
take
something that's just hinted at in the books and then turn it into a full-fledged scene, and they you know, it's clear they completely misunderstood the text, or maybe just intentionally misconstrued it.
Or kind of riffing on it in a different way.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then the last answer, E, is the sort of the dwarves escape, Bilbo doesn't, the dwarves return to rescue him. So this, I have no clue, because we've seen so many weird, interesting scenes of the Misty Mountains Goblin Town sequence in particular. Like, there's the weird one in the EW clips where, like, you know, it's sort of the structure of Goblin Town seems to resemble kind of a combination of Moria and like the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, like mine cart sequence,
tunnel sequence,
yeah, where they're like running along like all these like bridges and these like very sort of shoddily erected structures through the
you're
bowels
right.
of the mountain.
That's what that was reminding me of. Every time I've seen the trailers of them running around on those wooden catwalks, I had this nagging sense that it looked familiar and I couldn't place it. But that's exactly it. It's the Temple
Indiana
of Doom.
Jones.
Yes.
It's like a combination of Moria, Indiana Jones, and Swiss Family Robinson Treehouse.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent.
So, but there's a.
But
there's
you're right, Dave.
We
do actually have this gap. We have a gap between when he's in the mountains and then when we see them in the circle where he's saying, "You lost your home. I'm going to help you find it." Our riddle is actually directed right at this gap that we don't have a clue to.
Yeah. Actually,
isn't
I think
that handy?
I think that scene of him saying, "You lost your," that strikes me as earlier in the film because isn't that where Thorin asks him, you know, have you ever, do you know how to fight? And he laughs or something. I don't know. I kind of wonder if they've.
Oh, I thought, I guess there. Because there were pine trees in the background, I was figuring
but,
that was probably
but is
after
it, it's a fascinating
escape.
Question because it's clear that they're expanding the on-screen time of this scene, and so where people will be when is really an interesting question. You know, we've seen I think it was in the EW clips where they showed them running along the dwarves running along these catwalk things, and they grab like some kind of like a long log, and sort of carry it like a battering ram, but then use it to sort of sweep hordes of goblins aside as they're running, sort of knocking them off the catwalk. It's kind of an amusing scene. I've heard that the action sequence in the Goblin Town action sequence is kind of a mixture of action and humor. So it's kind of like a sort of a Bugs Bunny cartoon thing where the action is very sort of comical and kind of exaggerated. There's not a lot of like cutting heads off and stuff. But anyway, so, you know, and we've seen that the scene of something, I think a goblin attacking Bilbo, and Bilbo's just holding Sting in front of him and just accepting the blows of the goblin sword on it and stuff. And so it's like, is that before Riddles in the Dark, after Riddles in the Dark?
I'm almost positive that's before. And for this evidence, I get from the movie storybook that Houghton Mifflin sent me. And apparently, they are going to change Bilbo's separation from the party, so that Bilbo is actually not going to be. I don't think Bilbo's ever going to meet the Goblin King.
Oh.
He's never going to meet the Great Goblin. He is going to be separated from. He's going to be not captured by the goblins, but follow along behind. So he's going to like. He's going to be like hiding or something. The goblins will miss him.
I think you're right about that.
Capture the dwarves. He's going to follow them, and that's when he like accidentally falls down, or like, and some goblin catches up with him, and that's how he runs away, and that's how he gets separated from them.
Because the chronology in the book is the crack opens, they get captured, they go down to Goblin Town and the Great Goblin, Gandalf kills the Great Goblin, they escape. Bilbo gets lost while they're escaping. The dwarves escape. Then Bilbo, you know, does the Riddles in the Dark sequence, all that, and then he escapes and then meets up with them. I think you're right. I think probably what's going to happen is they're actually not going to be captured immediately. That the crack, rather than starting with them becoming immediately captured, will open into an action sequence, and then Bilbo.
No,
will be
I don't think so.
They.
The scene I've seen, they actually slide down some kind of slide into a big old basket.
Yeah,
and they get picked up by the goblins.
The movie storybook contains quite not very much prose and much pictures. This is like designed for younger children, and there are many aspects of the plot which are given a very bare summary. But this part actually is one of the most detailed parts of the book. Here's what the book says. Okay, as Beaufort sits at the entrance of the cave keeping watch, why Beaufort is keeping watch, I don't know, but anyway, Bilbo huddles up and starts to fall asleep. But just then, the floor of the cave drops away, swallowing the group and plunging them into darkness. Tumbling end over end along a dark, damp chute, Bilbo and his friends come clattering to a halt inside a rusty cage. Peering out through the bars, they realize they have been captured by goblins. Surrounded by a horde of these slimy, scabby monsters, the dwarves are led off in a line through the dark tunnels. Bilbo is at the back of the line and suddenly realizes there are no other goblins behind him. Seizing his chance, he quickly slips off into a gloomy side tunnel and tries to escape. Bilbo hasn't made as clean a getaway as he thought, however, and soon finds himself being chased through the caverns by a goblin. As the slimy, scarred creature gets closer, Bilbo draws his sword and sees that it is glowing with an eerie blue light. The goblin pounces, slashing at Bilbo. That, I think, is what we've been seeing in the trailers.
Okay.
Struggling and stumbling, Bilbo slips, and both he and the goblin fall headlong into a dark crevice, plunging even further into the gloom below. The goblin is killed in the fall, but Bilbo is now alone and lost, and that's when he finds Gollum.
Okay. Interesting. That's okay.
And I said, of like the entire book, that's one of the most detailed blow-by-blows it gives. For some reason, I don't even know. I mean, like, by contrast, The Departure from is given in one sentence, and it's not, by context, it's not even clear. Like, it says that he's reunited with them, but it doesn't even say whether it's in the mountains or out of the mountains. It's quite unclear.
Now, we do have a song in the soundtrack called Brass Buttons, so hopefully he will do something
promising.
Where he loses his buttons.
Yeah. Very
so
promising.
That's interesting. So, Okay. Well, my off the cuff speculation is completely wrong, but it still leaves open the interesting question of the chronology.
We still don't know how they're going to reunite.
Yeah. No, I think we don't really at all.
Very good. I think this is an excellent riddle. I don't think there's a whole lot of clarification. I mean, we've tried to be very careful about splitting hairs here, so I don't think there's a lot of clarification that needs to be done.
Yep. So, no, I think so.
So I say we move on.
Quickly. Yes. Okay. Yes. Riddle 15, what role will the Eagles play?
This is another question I'm really pleased with. I think this one's still – we know the Eagles rescue them, but we still have no clue where they're taking them.
Right.
So. And that's,
this might end up having to be tabled for that reason.
Oh, good point. If the last shot is the Eagles flying into the sky.
Yeah, exactly.
Apparently they dropped Muffet the Carrick because the Carrick is apparently included in the movie one.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll see.
Do we know that for sure? Like, for sure?
It's in that Chronicles book. The drawing of it is in the Chronicles book, and it's a shape like a big bear.
Right.
I don't think anything's guaranteed.
We didn't specifically say that the Carrick counts as Bjorn's house.
Yes, you did already say that, actually, in the episode.
Yep.
Yep.
And I think this point where Thorin actually hugs Bilbo, I think. I'm not sure.
Yep. I'm fine with Carrick counting. It basically boils down to, will they do the book thing, take them to their eyrie? Will they speed them along on their journey to Bjorn? Will they take them to a place not in the book, which is Radagast's house? So will there be a non-book detour? And then D was kind of the far out there answer of they're actually not going to rest. They're not going to carry them off, but we'll maybe kill the goblin.
Right, they're going to do something else.
Yeah. Yep. D seems okay. Almost hopelessly wrong at this point, but I think the other three are open.
Yep. Right. Yep. Okay.
Riddle 16.
16. I can leave in 1 minute. Okay, 16. What will happen to the great goblin? Gandalf kills him in an encounter with the goblins in the Misty Mountains, as in the book. Thorin kills him in their encounter. Thorin kills him in the Misty Mountains. He's killed by someone else in the encounter in the Misty Mountains, or he survives and shows up again in this or the other films.
I think this one's still
We know the last one's
too.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know how he died. We know he dies, but we don't know how.
Yep.
Yeah. I think this is still wide open. There is a Billy claims that this has been answered by the photo that he posted on Facebook, because on the Tolkien Professor page, because there's it's Gandalf and the dwarf standing before the great goblin. Although Billy says that they're unchained, so it looks like they're confronting him, but I don't know if we know this for sure. But Billy, man, dude. He's not dead. He's still alive. It looks like Gandalf is posed to kill him, but anybody could kill him at that point. So I think it's still wide open.
Still probable, but still not definite. Okay, then 17 was Radagast. What function will Radagast serve on the White Council in the Hobbit trilogy? Now, this is going to be interesting. Choices were honest, good guy, but has a minor role. So that he's not really on the council at all and doesn't really play a part. He's one of the inner circle operating on a par with Gandalf and Elrond and Galadriel. That he is Saruman's patsy, and D, that he is that he's not part of the White Council at all.
I think it's wide open. I mean, I don't think D is right, because we are going to be seeing him prior to Rivendell, so I guess he's going to be there, but we don't know in what capacity.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. We don't.
Oh, by the way, one quick clarification for the previous question for Billy. Billy asked, "What if he dies during his fall?" Since we see him falling, if he's pushed by Gandalf or Thorin, that counts as A or B. Otherwise,
that counts.
Otherwise, C. Yeah, it's true. I mean, if he dies of natural causes, I guess that would be C. Though it's not something any of us anticipated.
Killed by someone
else.
Fate. So,
now, Riddle 18 is interesting. Riddle 18 is a great one.
For 17? I think 17 is pretty clear.
I don't think so.
There'll need to be some interpretation of events, but I think it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
18.
Yeah.
Sorry.
18. Okay.
How will Sauron the Necromancer appear in the first film?
Oh, yes. 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 Is he will be referred to in dialogue, but will make no direct appearance. B was he'll never appear on camera, but we'll hear his voice. Maybe he's issuing instructions. C is he will appear in a form we saw in Lord of the Rings, such as a black armored humanoid or a flaming eyeball. D is he will appear in a non-corporeal, non-Lord of the Rings form, some kind of wraith or shadow. E is he will appear in a corporeal, non-Lord of the Rings form, cloaked, hooded, wizard, fair form, something like that.
That's right.
So we really split hairs on that. That's pretty specific.
Yeah, we did.
If he – I'm sure – so there's no chance that he will just be completely absent. He'll at least be mentioned. So I think there's no adjustments that need
right.
to be there.
Right, which would be A, but yeah, no, I mean, I still think I'm still liking my prediction. I said corporeal.
Yeah, all
Lord
three of
the
us
Rings
said
this.
Yep. All three of us said that.
Yeah, I feel good about that too.
Now, Riddle 19 is interesting. Riddle 19 is about the dwarf ring, and I just want to say that in that 13-minute clip, Saruman talks about the dwarf rings, which I found very good. Yes. Aha. So, yes, Riddle 19 is what role will the dwarf ring play in the movie?
Yes,
what Saruman says is the seven are powerless without the one, or something like that. The seven basically. So, but anyway, he's talking about the dwarf rings in the
yeah,
clip.
Yeah. So A will be none at all. B would be A seems ruled out at this point. B is passing reference, does not figure into plot. So at a minimum, it looks like it's probably B, which means I'm screwed. C is only foreshadows the power of the One Ring over its wielder. Can't even remember what we meant by that.
Could be.
Basically, and then
well,
D is,
I think because the wielder of the dwarf ring gets affected, like gets more greedy.
Yes.
I think it may be connected to what they call the dragon sickness in Thorne's family. Yeah, so it shows that it has a power over its holder.
Exactly.
Will we see that on screen? I'm wondering if the questions that the answers I'm reading from the
No, you're right.
Text.
You're right.
That's right.
So would we see that on screen? how would C be executed on screen?
Well, what I've heard Armitage say about Thorin is something about how this dragon sickness runs in his family. And I'm thinking that might just be like a little bit of a fog cover over the fact that his family are the holders of the ring and it could be connected
right,
to
again,
the ring.
But it,
you know,
but
am
if,
I saying?
If, but if they don't connect that on the screen, if we just, you know, if that's all we know and there's no reference to the ring on screen, I don't think, so that's why I'm asking how.
Well,
how
no, but I'm suspecting that it could be connected to the ring in the movie. They're just not letting us know that ahead of time. So, yeah.
Right.
I mean, that would be
how on screen, how would you do, like, would it be during a White Council discussion? Would they talk about this or?
Well, I would say,
that's
first
what I was
of all,
thinking.
That exposition would be sufficient. if they talk about the effect of the dwarf ring and their whole discussion of the dwarf ring is basically as a setup for the One Ring so that we can know what to expect and that we can correctly interpret, you know, any ominous music that accompanies, you know, Bilbo holding and looking at the One Ring and all that kind of thing. And if that's its only function, I would think that that counts. As for how it could be depicted, well, it would depend upon what we see of their history. If we see, you know, if we see Thrain on screen, I think this is one of the things I suggested in the episode. If we see Thrain on screen and he's got like, you know, like we get some kind of on-screen exposition of, or not just exposition, but flashback to Thrain's departure and destruction, and he's at all like Gollum-ish from the effect of the ring on him. That too could be used as a kind of a setup. So that's the intention of my recollection of the of the intention of C is not necessarily to predict like particular visual choices, but rather that you know, the role that it will play in the movie is just as a setup for the One Ring, that it will help help the audience to have a framework for understanding the One Ring, you know, better when he gets it.
Okay,
but
that
could
that
be
makes
expositional.
Sense. Okay, that makes sense. D would be it would actually be a part of the plot. So like they would be there'd be discussion about them hoping to find it at the Lonely Mountain, or maybe the whole crazy cockamamie, they'll replace the Arkan Stone with the Dwarven Ring thing. But that's kind of what D means, right?
Yeah, right. And connecting some to the backstory of the dwarves too. So you know that they can talk about, you know, maybe one of them will recall that like Sauron betrayed them before because he gave them the ring, or that he stole and was trying to steal it back from them, or whatever. I mean, and any of that kind of stuff too.
Oh my God, guys, we're almost done.
Yeah.
Just a brief note.
We're out of time.
That's right.
Brief note. This is definitely a question that might be reactivated for future film, because it could be. This film, maybe all we'll get is Saruman's comment about the Seven, but then, in film two, if we see Gandalf encountering Thrain, then it becomes more like C. So this definitely could be reactivated. All right. Yeah. Next riddle.
Yep.
Riddle?
Which
20.
Was well, the... 20, which is the songs.
Yay!
Right. Yeah, so there's six songs in the book up to where we think the end of the film will be, the Eagles' Rescue. And so our question was, will they be included and how? A is contrary to all evidence, beyond hope, they will all make their way into the film complete. B is significant portions of songs will be included verbatim, but probably not accompanied by music. But it could be, like the dwarf's drinking song or Baggins' chip plate song is in there. So if that was the only song that we got, that would probably count as B. C is most or all of the songs will be referenced on screen as a, to placate the Tolkien fans, but only with a passing reference or a snippet of verse. D is the only book songs to be included will be, the only book songs will be to be included will be the two listed in the published soundtrack. So if the only songs we get are the ones that we already know about on the soundtrack, that's D. C is if they refer to the other songs, but only sort of as kind of Easter egg references. B is we will get significant, we'll get the goblins chanting down to Goblin Town as they go down there.
Yes, that's sort of the classic illustration of how we could get another song. Maybe they sing it, maybe they don't, but if we have something which sounds quite distinctly like the down to Goblin Town verse.
Or even if you get a goblin just simply saying 15 birds in a fir tree, even if you just have that one line.
C would be like the elves in Rivendell commenting on how their ponies need shoeing, and then the goblins saying, "Hey, 15 birds and 5 fir trees, eh?"
B would be like having
an elf recite like a complete verse or two from Tra-la-la-lally.
I mean, hey, if an elf utters the syllables fa-la with music in the background, I'm going B. I mean,
there are harpists. We do have harp players at Rivendell. I've seen a scene with that. So you never know that in the very background we could be getting tra la la or something, or fa la la.
If we get tra la la, it's B. I'm sorry, it's B. If we get any whiff in the distance of tra la la la, I would think that's B. But.
I'm not willing to stipulate it now, but I certainly think it requires very serious consideration if the words tra la la lally are uttered on screen. That's over the top reference.
So again, couldn't you just see Elrond using the phrase down in the valley in when he's welcoming them?
What did he say? He shows up on his horse.
That would be an awesome like Easter egg thing.
And ending with the words ha ha.
Ha ha. Yes, exactly. Exactly. If Elrond ever says ha ha, I'll be pretty surprised, I have to say. I'm trying to imagine what Hugo Weaving would be doing with his eyebrows when he said ha ha. But okay, and then our last riddle was just a few days ago.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. What evidence will the audience see in The Hobbit, an unexpected journey of Saruman's impending villainy, villainhood, evil, treachery, whatever? A is none whatsoever, no hints. This is the Christopher Lee answer, where he said in an interview that we're seeing Saruman as a good guy here. B is foreshadowing and dramatic irony, suspicious reactions to news on the council, etc., but nothing definite and no one suspects him. C is some members of the council clearly suspect him and may even discuss it behind his back, but the audience sees no clear evidence. D is the audience gets clear evidence that Saruman is evil or becoming evil, even if the other characters do not see it. So the main thing about this question is it's not a question of what other characters know. It's a question of what evidence is provided to the audience.
To the audience, exactly. Exactly. And that's in... that's correctly in the order of like ascending evil of Saruman, as far as what we see.
Yep.
So yeah.
By the way, Daniel Helen just commented. He says that after listening to the previous episode, he went and rewrote the Tolkien Gateway entry on the White Council.
Oh really?
Pretty impressive.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. I don't. He didn't explain. He didn't explain why or how he rewrote it, but that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, you know, I have a lot of respect for those Tolkien Gateway guys. You know, I think they do some really good work over there, and I think that actually that kind of work is really underappreciated, I think, by a lot of people.
Yep.
Daniel says the old article was truly awful.
Yeah,
well,
we did it, guys.
I'm really impressed.
We did it, and I have to leave in like 60 seconds. But that was good. So I think that was good, and I'm glad we went over. I know it's been a long time since I'd thought in detail about some of our early riddles and stuff. So it's good to have all that stuff in our head. We will have for everybody wants to participate. We're going to be having we're going to be officially closing the Riddles in the Dark voting. So if you want to be involved in the official vote and get the possibility to win a prize, you have to submit your votes by Wintrish.
The cutoff is Monday, and I guess we'll call that Monday midnight. So the December 10th, 11:59:59.
Right. All right. December 10th at 11:59, and we'll just call it Eastern time.
Yes, Eastern time. Yes.
Because Eastern time. Yeah. So by 11:59 p.m. Eastern time on Monday evening, that is the last time to submit your votes and have them count towards possibility of winning a prize and winning great recognition and respect from everybody. So that's.
Now I also want to let folks know that have asked. I haven't actually talked to Gore about this, but we may have to do another sort of Riddles in the Dark retrospective or something. Afterwards, right.
Oh yeah, we will certainly be doing a Riddles in the Dark actual podcast episode sometime in the month of December after the film is released. We'll probably just do one, and we probably won't introduce any new riddles or anything until 2013. Yeah. But we'll do at least one wrap up. Just talking about the film and stuff. So.
Okay.
All right, Corey, take us away.
Okay. Before I do, one last quick thing. Also, you have until Monday to register for Mythmoot. So your last chance, if you want to come and watch the film with us and participate in discussions afterwards, then this is the last chance. So Baltimore, the weekend of 15th and 16th, which is next weekend for crying
out. Next week!
A week from tomorrow, we will be watching the film together, and then we will be spending the rest of the day in guided discussions. It's going to be great. So anyway, so your last chance to register for Mythmoot, go to mythgard.org, and through Monday, but after Monday we're closing down the registration because we have to have our definite numbers for our venue. So, okay, that's the last thing I wanted to say. So thanks everybody for listening, and Godspeed.